one is really good. Okay. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome. This is the third in our new series here at the library called Meet the Publishing Pros. And tonight we are very honored to have with us Mike Shadskin. And I'm going to tell you just a teeny bit about him before he takes over. And I would just like to add that there will be a Q&A afterwards. So he knows an awful lot of stuff about the book business. So if you have any questions, get them ready. My name is Betty Sargent. And the first thing I want to tell you about Mike is that his specialty is change, especially as it relates to the book publishing business. And so how did he get to be such an expert on this dramatic change that is happening daily in the publishing business? Well, over his 50-year career, he has been an author with six published books, including The Book Business, What Everyone Needs to Know. You might want to just pick that up because it's got a lot of good stuff in it. He's been an author, an editor, an agent, a production manager, a sales and marketing director, and then he founded the Idea Logical Company and has been a much sought-after consultant for the last 40 years. Mike knows everybody, he is respected by everybody, just happens to be brilliant, and everybody loves him. You are about to see why right now as he graciously shares his knowledge and insights with us. Mike.
Thanks very much.
Okay, I've made my own list of, I don't know whether the mic is really necessary or not, but I'm using it. I've made my own list of things to talk to aspiring authors about, and I'm going to take 15 minutes to talk about the industry as I see it and what I think you need to know, and then I'm really much more interested in answering your questions. So this may provoke some, or you may come at questions that have nothing to do with what I'm saying now, but that's fine too. Okay. I think the big picture sort of requires a 30-year look because the business has really changed from what it had been for many, many years dramatically over the last three decades. In 1990, there were about 500,000 titles in the total universe of possibilities. That is, publishers had 500,000 titles that theoretically were in print and in their warehouse, which they theoretically could ship you. And the biggest bookstores in 1990 carried 125,000 to 150,000 titles. And lots of bookstores carried 75,000 titles. So the chances that you would find what you were looking for in a big bookstore were pretty good, right? Assuming that they had the 125,000 that were more likely to sell, and they had a fourth of the total universe. Today, there are 15 million titles. Ingram, which is a wholesaler in Nashville, Tennessee, which is a company that you need to know about if you're going to know about the book business, they have a print-on-demand capability called Lightning. There are 18 million titles in the Lightning database. Some of them are duplicates. Some of them are phony. But all of them are listed as available with Ingram. And if you order one at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it'll be printed that night and shipped to you the following morning. So the fact that those books are only available to print on demand doesn't matter. They're available. Now, the biggest stores, so let's say 15 million because that's a nice, neat 30 times what it was three decades ago. But the biggest bookstores now don't carry 100. They don't carry 100,000 titles anymore. They carry 30,000 titles. They carry 20,000 titles. So the odds that you will find any particular thing that you're looking for in a bookstore are teeny, teeny, tiny. And that is one of the reasons that so much of the business has moved online. Now, I also like to talk about the fact, and Jeff Bezos knew this, books are the very best online products. One reason is because there are so many choices, and there's no way any store can carry them all. The second reason is They're heavy. And if you're going anyplace after you go to the bookstore, you don't really want to carry the book around with you. And the third reason is, very seldom do you need that book right now. Usually, a day or two from now would be just fine. And an online retailer can get it to you a day or two from now. So the fact that the sales have been shifting from the bookstores to online is not the fault of anybody running bookstores. It is a very natural evolution as consumers do what is the most sensible thing for them. Okay, now back in 08, well, 07 is when the Kindle began, November 2007. And when the Kindle began, there had been ebooks before that, right? There had been a Sony Reader, there had been a Palm. I started reading on a Palm Pilot in 1999. And then there was a Microsoft Reader. But all those formats were proprietary. And in fact, Sony would sell you the book. Bookstores didn't sell you the Sony book. Palm would sell you the Palm book. Bookstores didn't sell you the Palm book. So the bookstores were sort of cut out of the game. Amazon came in 2007, and of course they did it because they wanted to sell the ebooks through Kindle. And they did something that people have forgotten, but was a big risk at the time. That was before Wi-Fi. So the Kindle actually dialed up to get to where the books were to deliver the books. That cost money. We were going to put, Kindle owner didn't want to pay any money. So Amazon took the risk that if they paid for the dial-up, that you would use it to buy books. And you wouldn't use it just to look at what was there, or heaven forbid, go to some other website online on your Kindle, which you wouldn't do because it was clunky. But the point is, if they hadn't made it free and easy for you to go use the machine to get online to get the books, it wouldn't have worked. But because they did that, and because they charged a lot for a Kindle, it was $400 in the beginning, they made the books cheap, right? That was the thing that before agency, Amazon's idea was, we'll make these ebooks so cheap that people will buy the Kindles and want to get the ebooks. But that's an equation that only worked for the heavy reader. If you read two books a year, the Kindle was a terrible investment. If you read two books a week, it was a great investment. So even though they didn't sell a lot of Kindles, they sold a lot of books relative to the number of Kindles that were out there, because it was the heavy readers that were getting them. And this brought everybody else into the ebook business. And then by 2009, 2010, through Amazon and through other ebook sources, you could reach a significant percentage of the possible readers in the world. And that was the open door for authors to start self-publishing. And some of them did it very, very, very successfully, but there was an early mover advantage because there weren't so many, the 15 million books, they weren't here then. The number of bookstores was much larger then. So the market hadn't changed in the way that it has now. So the authors who started to do self-publishing with 99-cent books and $1.99 books were able to build an audience. And over time, you could tell which were the good books self-published and which ones weren't, because the good books had a lot of reviews and they were on bestseller lists. So over time, there were more and more vetted books that didn't come from publishers, but which if you wanted to read for 99 cents or $1.99, you could do. So this has created this massive number of titles over time, and it's not just the authors who are finding it harder to break through with self-publishing. The publishers are finding it harder because there are so many books, and in fact, 30 years ago, big publishers never lost money on a book. I mean, they'd lose money if they had spent $1 million on the advance. But if all they did was get the book and over the first little while that they had it, make it available, pretty soon it worked until there were lots and lots and lots of books, and then it didn't. So the big publishers are suffering from this glut, right? It is no longer the case that every book you do, as it was 30 years ago, will sell 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 copies no matter what. Now big publishers can put out a book and sell 78 or 192 because there are so many books competing for the attention that new books are headed into a world that is so flooded that it's much, much harder for them to gain purchase. So that's the overall environment. Next thing I want to talk about a little bit is getting an agent, because the self-publishing environment is tough, and if you can be, and so is the publisher's publishing environment, but if you can get bought by a publisher, gives you a slightly better odds than if you do it on your own, and also you get a paycheck for having sold to the publisher in the first place. Getting an agent, if that's what you choose to do, the way to do it is to go to a website called Publishers Marketplace. And Publishers Marketplace has a subscription fee. I forget what it is. It's not a lot, $20 a month or something. If you're a subscriber, you can see lots and lots of data. And they have data on every deal that every agent and every publisher has made since the early part of this century. In other words, almost 20 years of deals. So if you're writing a book about a subject or a time period or whatever, or a novel of a particular genre, you can go on Publishers Marketplace and you can find out what agents represent those books, what authors write those books. And that means that if you're looking for an agent, you know that you're pitching something that is relevant to that agent's work. The other thing that the Publishers Marketplace tells you is each agent's submission requirements, because each of them have their own ideas about what they want to see. It is generally true that if you are not a published author, if you're writing nonfiction, you can often get by with an outline and some sample material because the subject of the book and your expertise count for a lot. If you're writing fiction, you almost always, and you've never been published before, you almost always have to write the whole book. And the agent won't peddle it without that, and you won't be able to sell it without that. So fiction and nonfiction break down differently when you're going after agents. If you self-publish, self-publishing can make a lot of sense in some cases. If you do lectures on how to buy real estate, and you have 35 people in the room, you know, twice a week for what you do, well then, yeah, self-publish your book, print them on demand 25 or 30 or 40 at a time, which won't cost you a lot of money, bring them to your meetings, tell the people in your audience about where they are, they'll be able to buy them. All of it's not hard to get yourself online so that Amazon and other bookstores can make you available. When you self-publish, there are two stops that you have to make. You can do it in one, but it makes sense to go directly to Amazon for Kindle and for what they call Create Space, which is Amazon's version of print-on-demand for books. And the reason you want to do that is because you'll get the most money by dealing with them directly. But you could deal with them, and you can deal with everyone else through Ingram. And Ingram is a wholesaler and distributor based in Nashville. They have a program called Ingram Spark, S-P-A-R-K. And Ingram Spark is the on-ramp for individual authors to get Ingram services. And if you put your book in Ingram Spark, Ingram can print it on demand. And if Ingram can print it on demand, it shows up in their database as available. And every bookstore in the world looks to Ingram's database when they're ordering a book. So if you're in Spark, and if your book is available on demand and as an ebook, any promotion that you do to a retailer will put them in a position to buy your book from an established source, somebody that they're ordering from every day. So you're right in the flow of commerce, and it doesn't really cost. I mean, there is some sort of an annual maintenance charge, but it's not particularly significant. This is what if you're self-publishing, that is exactly what you want to do. Also, if you're self-publishing, you have to do some online promotion. And there's some things that are pretty obvious, like beef up your own website, beef up your Facebook and Instagram and all of those other presences. But because this self-publishing business is 10 years old, there's a lot of services that are available to help you promote. People who have done this many times, it makes sense. I mean, you've got to do things to get people to be aware of the book, even when it's available online. And you can use stores a bit. So you're not going to, getting general distribution to stores is possible, but it would be both expensive and risky for reasons that I won't get into unless somebody really wants to know more about that. But on the other hand, if you have a book that has a lot of activity that takes place in Omaha, and for whatever reason, and you call the bookstores in Omaha and you tell them you've got a novel that has, or a nonfiction book, whatever it is, that has a lot of local information and that you're going to be pinging local radio stations and local newspapers about it, and it's available at Ingram, the store might very well put a copy or two on their shelf, but they'll certainly be aware of it if somebody walks in asking for it and order it. So it is a way to make it possible to get to everyone everywhere. So those are the sort of core things that I think you'd want to know if you are self-publishing or if you're aspiring to be published and don't have the time or patience or success that you want finding an agent. And I think I'll turn it back over to Betty, who's going to orchestrate whatever questions and answers we're going to have.
Okay, so as you can see, Mike knows everything, and we figured we'd spend a lot of time tonight opening this evening to questions, because that's really probably why most of you are here, to learn whatever it is you're particularly interested in learning. So let's start. I'm just going to point to people and repeat the question, except I can't, here we go. Repeat the question, and Mike will answer it. Any questions? No questions. Oh, good. Okay, sir. This.
You touched on these people who do your marketing for you, as opposed to, because the piece that always scares the living daylights out of me is all that social media and promoting and so on and so forth. So the idea that you could get somebody to do that for you, could you talk a bit more about that and what sort of services they provide?
So the question is, how do you find people to provide marketing services that are worth the money, because they can be quite expensive?
That's a really good question, and I can't truthfully say that I've got any kind of magical answer. I think that the in general, of course, they're all Googleable, right? So author, I haven't actually done this, but marketing services for authors is going to throw you a lot of returns. I think that and there are a lot of levels of this, right? So, for example, one thing is getting your metadata right. Now, this is not something that takes an expert a lot of time to do. It is something that makes a massive difference in terms of whether your book. Oh yes, thank you very much. Metadata. Metadata is data about the book, the title, the author, the price, the subject categories, the brief description of the book, the long description of the book, the author's hometown, all of the various facts that surround the book itself that might be a trigger or a tool or a hint for someone that this is something that's important to them. Now, I haven't really looked. But I would imagine that you could find somebody to help you get your metadata straight for low hundreds of dollars. I mean, this is not a big job. So I would imagine that you find somebody, people who can competently do this for a pretty small amount of money. What I was thinking about was more aggressive marketing, where you're looking for, let's say, who are the audiences for the book? Where are they online? What are there opportunities to ping them online? Are there places that you can put some sort of a story about the book or a review of the book where people will see it and where the data in that story will lead people back to the book? This is, you know, working the book the modern way, as opposed to the old way, where the old way was getting the New York Times to review it, getting you on Oprah. These things are easier and simpler and can be done by somebody from their living room. I don't think they're after us. But in terms of how to know the good ones from the bad ones, the only way that I can think of is references. And at this point, you certainly don't want to be hiring somebody who hasn't done this before, because there are people who have made this their business for years and years and years, and you'll find people with a lot of experience.
Thank you. Sir. Did you hear that, everybody? The difference between Ingram Lightning and standalone small independent publishers? Is that?
No, they're not. They're services.
Oh.
Self-publishing. Yeah.
Self-publishing services.
Ingram is the beating heart of the global book business. They are as establishment as it gets. Every bookstore, every library, and every bookstore retailer and publisher in the world does business with Ingram. So the thing about Lightning is what Ingram called their print-on-demand capability when they built it. It was Lightning Print. And then when e-books happened, and obviously the same file, digital file, can be turned into a printed book or can be turned into an e-book. So Lightning went from Lightning Print to Lightning Source. And as Lightning Source, they provide printed books on demand, but they also distribute the ebook file to Nook and Google and anybody else, who Apple and Amazon, if you want them to anybody who sells ebooks, working through Ingram Spark. And Spark is the name for their on-ramp for individuals through the internet, right? As opposed to publishers who call somebody they know there and work with a human being. Spark is what anybody can access through the internet. So that's what Ingram is, okay? iUniverse, and who are the other ones you named?
Book Baby.
iUniverse was a print-on-demand operation. But the difference between them and Ingram is they didn't have connections to every bookstore in the world. I mean, they would try to put, it was fine if you wanted to order some books, but it really wasn't going to get you distribution. The thing about Ingram is that they tie the print on demand to real distribution, and the store that is ordering might order a Random House book from them or a HarperCollins book from them can also order your book from them, and it will arrive in the same box, even though your book wasn't printed at the time that the store ordered it. I don't know the exact status of things, but the fact is they're aggregating those services all the time. Ingram does not do it. Ingram provides links to people who do it. And And if you're working, I really don't know the mechanics of that. The problem with going to an iUniverse to get your editing done is, first of all, who knows how good it is? I actually can say almost certainly it is not equally good on every book they do. So there are some things that they can do well and probably some things that they can't do well. But the fact is, no matter how good what they do is, that doesn't make a bookstore. It's still iUniverse. It's still self-published material. It's still obviously self-published material. Whereas if your book is in the Ingram database with the name that you made up for your little company in it, it's not nearly as obvious. From a store's point of view, it's in the Ingram database, and it's sitting right there along with the books of the most famous authors that they know. And they're every bookstore is ordering from Ingram every day. So it's a simple matter to pick up your book or along with the others. So I suspect you're going to find that most of the self-publishing services that are not Ingram are going to find it difficult to survive. I mean, I don't know exactly how they all work, but I think that that's the case.
Adrian?
What about CreateSpace at Amazon?
Well,
the question is, what about CreateSpace at Amazon?
Well, CreateSpace, it was interesting. When Ingram set up Lightning, what they did was they built a printing facility for Lightning and then they had two or three in the country. The CreateSpace idea was any printer in the world will take our files, and they set up relationships all over the world, which was faster, but the quality control was harder. But over time, they perfected it. And CreateSpace is a perfectly good print-on-demand option. That is, if you go to Amazon and you put your book in for Kindle and you put your book in CreateSpace and somebody orders your book from Amazon, CreateSpace will print it and it'll be fine. And it will be just as fine as if another bookstore ordered your book from Ingram and Lightning printed it. The problem with CreateSpace is bookstores don't want to support Amazon. Mm-hmm. So if you're only in CreateSpace, other bookstores will be very reluctant to stock your book. And that is and also, it's not their, Amazon doesn't care. They're not really in the business of selling books to other retailers. They're really in the business of being a retailer. There are a lot of authors that only put their books in CreateSpace and don't do Ingram, because Amazon will be, if you don't do anything to promote to bookstores or anything else, Amazon's going to end up being 80% of your sales. And it's not irrational from an author's point of view to say, I do this, I get 80% of the sales, it's not worth setting up another account for the other 20%. But the fact is, any bookstore you meet, any museum shop you go into, and they're not going to want it. It's only, that's going to the Amazon audience only. And I wouldn't make a big deal about this because I don't think about these things politically. But if you do think about these things politically, you do not want to participate in Amazon taking over the world. So you don't really want to foster the situation that only Amazon has the book and nobody else does. And that is a story that is true of a lot of books.
So remember that. Yes, sir. The question is, does Ingram Spark have any requirements for the material they accept and publish?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, no. They're making no quality judgments at all. They don't have the tools. They don't have the people. That's not what they do. And that's why people talk about the fact that there's a lot of garbage. But from Ingram's point of view, I don't know exactly what the business model is, but let's just say for the sake of argument, they charge you $100 to load the book into Spark. Yeah. If they do, I'm making that up, okay? But if it is $100, they're making $15 or they're making $22. In other words, it's not costing them money. So you put it up there and there it is. And if anybody wants it, they'll print it and deliver it to them. They're not telling anybody it's good. right? All they're doing is telling them, if you know about it and you want it, we've got it. So
it provides access.
Exactly. They're providing access and distribution and production services, but they're not providing any kind of endorsement, and they're not pretending to.
Yes, ma'am.
Hybrid publishers,
the question is, would you describe those a little bit? Tell us a little bit about that.
By hybrid, you mean?
The
that's called vanity publishing.
Yeah, but I think it's also called hybrid publishing.
Is it really?
I think so, yeah.
That would be Greenleaf and Rosetta.
The old model before Lightning was that the vanity publisher, Vantage Press, was the big name, would publish your book, right? And what you did was you essentially bought 1,000 copies or 2,000 copies and hope you have a garage, right? Because they're not going anywhere. And those vanity publishers made their money selling you books. Doing that today would be just crazy, because there's no advantage to having inventory, and you don't have any place to put it. So I'm not quite sure. So the costs are really pretty minor, because the cost is getting from a doc file to a PDF, essentially, getting from a doc file to something that's designed. Actually, I was at Ingram today. And I was just being told about a new capability that they don't have yet, but they will have shortly, where essentially it will be what somebody was asking about earlier. You'll load in the doc file, and they'll say, okay, I want this to be a 6x9 paperback book, you tell them. And then they tell you, okay, it's going to be between, if you make it this size type, it'll be this many pages. If you make it that size type, it'll be that many pages. So you push that button. And then they say, how would you like the chapters, the openings to look? And they show you 6 different things, and you pick one of those, and then you've got something for your chapter openings. So what they're doing is building a tool to help you design books online, on the fly. They don't have it yet, but they will. And in general, I think these things, if somebody other than Ingram invented a thing, Ingram would buy it. They are the global infrastructure for the world of books. So there's nothing that nobody's going to offer something that they will not, if it's of value, that they won't have. If that somebody else has it, they'll buy it from them.
I can give you a little more updated information on hybrid publishers.
Okay. Why didn't you edit it for him then?
Well,
okay, never mind.
I couldn't. But I was sent a proposal that he got from one of these hybrid publishers. And part of their service, unlike Vanity Press or unlike Ingram, is they do say they have a sales force that will go out to bookstores, retailers, and they will get your book into stores.
I would really take that with a grain of salt.
Well, yes, me too. Their cost to him was, this is for a whole package of editing, cover design, but no PR. There was no PR in this package. $50,000. I thought that was ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
But also, 4 years ago, I self-published a dog book. It didn't buy it.
Yes.
And they claim that they sort of have the standards of a public.
You were wise. The thing is that the thing is that I want to go back to where we started. In 1990, big publishers never sold less than 2,000 or 3,000 copies of any book, because there were a lot of bookstores, and they were the ones who controlled the access to the bookstores. And it's very important. And this is how the publishing has changed. So if you sell 2,000 or 3,000 copies of a book, let's, for the sake of argument, say it's a $25 book. You're getting about $12.50 a copy. 3,000 times $12.50 a copy is $45,000, $50,000. Your print cost on those, your print cost for 3,000 books is like $4,000. Okay, so that leaves you some margin to pay for the editor, pay the author something. And the way the publishers did their math, they convinced themselves they weren't making money. Because when they did their individual title profit and loss statements, they put in 50% for overhead. Got to pay for the overhead, right? So when they looked and they had that 50% in, a lot of books lost money. But they didn't actually lose money, right? Because if a book contributes 12% or 16% or 22%, it's not 50. But if you leave all that out, you don't have enough money to run your business. That money is not lost. It's actually profit, okay? What's changed is publishers can't sell 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 of everything anymore. Even the biggest publishers will sell 138 and 292 because there aren't so many bookstores anymore. There are far more books for them to choose from. The bookstores that are there are smaller. And you just can't fit all of those books into those stores. So the promise of putting books on shelves, particularly if it's not, you know, Random House can make that promise, and Random House can make it stick, and so can HarperCollins, but not anybody.
Yes, ma'am. Did you all hear that? What does the market look like in 20 years? And my understanding is, how does the reader know what's good and what's not? Is that part of your question?
Yeah, and how does the writer work towards
that? Right.
Well, the short answer is that it might be convenient to think of publishing as commercial publishing and non-commercial publishing. And commercial publishing will include not-for-profits like university presses and that, are people who are doing it because they're trying to run a business, right? So they pick the books they publish because they're trying to run a business. They assign their marketing money because they're trying to run a business, okay? The problem is the consumer is no longer, as they were 30 years ago, choosing only from those books. They're choosing from all the books. And all the books include just about every book that was ever written, which didn't used to be the case. Books would die. They don't die anymore, okay? So the fact of the matter is that there is no way to change the reality and make it possible. Each new book coming into the market today is competing with 15 million books. Each new book coming into the market 30 years ago was competing with 500,000 books. There's no way that you can get the square peg into the round hole. So the long and short answer is commercial publishing is losing ground because the other publishers, the author self-publishers, and the next thing to watch for, entity self-publishers, the Democratic Party, the AARP, Alcoholics Anonymous, etc. Anybody can be a publisher now, right? You don't have to invest in inventory. You don't need a staff. You can put it all together with the pieces. Well, those people don't care about making money either. They care about spreading their message. So the poor publisher who is trying to do this for a profit every year, the slope gets steeper and steeper. And in fact, all that will happen is commercial publishing will, as it has been, continue to get smaller and smaller. And the amount of what is read that is not coming from commercial publishers or is coming from 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, not from what's being published in the last year or two, which are the people who are trying to get exposure, that there's just no math that works. So the answer, the short answer is the book business will not be that kind of a business, and it's headed toward that. There are five major publishers. I would really expect there to be no more than two 5 years from now.
Oh, I hope that's not true. Yes.
Well, first of all, agents are highly different in how they look at self-publishing. And there are some agents that will look at limited success at self-publishing, and some publishers who will look at limited success at self-publishing as a sign that they could do more. And then there are other agents and publishers who will look at limited success in self-publishing and say, it proves it doesn't work. So I think that the profiles of the agents that you can see in Publishers Marketplace would give you some hints on that two ways. One of them, some of them will just come out and say something. But the other thing is you see what books they represent. So you can see if an agent has successfully represented and sold books that were self-published previous to the agent taking them on. I think that the challenge of getting an agent, and then once you get an agent, the challenge of getting a publishing deal, and then when you get a publishing deal, the challenge of waiting for the publisher to put the book in a queue and do what they have to do, you're talking about the difference between publishing it now and maybe it being published 2 or 3 years from now. So it's not crazy for an author to say, I ain't waiting. So the question is, what percentage of a book that is published will be sold as an e-book? Is that the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
What?
Okay, well, going forward.
Well, going back and forward.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So what happened, let's remember, from a book published, if you're at Random House or HarperCollins or Hachette or any of the, or Oxford University Press, what you do for an author that the author cannot do for themselves is put books in bookstores. The author can hire a designer. The author can get the book designed. The author can print on demand is now available. For that matter, the author can go to a printer and print 5,000 copies. But an author cannot, on their own, get books into Barnes & Noble or independent stores. That's what a publisher is for, okay? When self-publishing started to happen, and Amazon, by 10 years ago, wasn't half the market, but you could reach half the market through Amazon and through Kindle. Amazon was discounting the e-books, if you recall, right? And that was putting real pressure on the print book, because if the print book is $20 and the e-book is $3.99, that's a big difference than if the print book is $20 and the e-book is $14. Because there is reason for the ebook to be cheaper. You can't churn it in. It's hard to pass along to somebody else. It's not as, it doesn't have as much value to the consumer as the printed book that they really control, and which, by the way, they can then resell, right? Well, you can't resell the ebook, but you can resell the print book. So, but the publishers saw this as an enormous threat. And the way publishing has always worked is that the publisher would establish what they called the retail price, and the trade, that is the bookstores and the wholesalers, buy at a reduction, a discount, off the retail price. And the point is the publisher wants to create some margin so stores will exist. So they give stores 40 or 50% off the retail price. And over time, many stores, like back in the 80s was a big thing with Crown Publishing, but it happened with others, the store wouldn't keep the whole 50% or 40%. They would discount the book in order to bring customers to their store or so and so forth. But that was print books. They had to get them all from the publishers. The publishers were perfectly okay with that. In fact, the publishers loved it when the stores discounted their books because they sold more. But then the e-books came along. And the e-book and Amazon priced those e-books real cheap. And in the beginning, there was a surge of movement from print to e-books. That was very threatening to the publishers. Because if the business suddenly had, by 2012, become 75% e-books, who needs a publisher? Right? You just, that's what it is. Everybody could just go direct to the ebook vendor. So the publishers created something called agency pricing. And what that meant was that instead of I will sell you this to a retailer at price X, and I will say that the price is Y, and you will sell it for somewhere between what I sold it to you for and what I said is the maximum price, the publisher said, no, no, no. E-books, we set the price, we control the price, you can't discount the e-books. And it was called agency pricing. And the way Amazon looks at it is, I'm not selling you the book, the publisher is selling you the book, I'm just the sales agent, that's why agency pricing. Okay. So by the when the publishers did this, and it was a real battle to get it installed, what they did for all the commercial, the most commercial books, is they eliminated the big price differential that used to exist between print and e. And as a matter of fact, Amazon, because they want to do this to the publishers, and they're allowed to discount the print books, Amazon often will make the print book cheaper than the ebook just to show the publisher that they don't know what they're doing, right? So that is the reason. The five big commercial publishers control 60% or 70% of the most commercial books. And the most commercial books are agency priced, which means that the explosion of ebook sales stopped. And the publishers and Amazon, it doesn't discount the other guys as much as they used to because it was all about discounting the headline books. That was really what it was about because that brought them more business. So the net result is that the ebook business has sort of plateaued at 20 to 25%. Now, it's not the same across. It is much higher for romance fiction. It is much lower for nonfiction, topical nonfiction. It is almost zero for for illustrated books. For obvious reasons. But the industry average for the big guys is in the neighborhood of 20 to 25%. But I'm sure that it's higher for non-agency publishers where Amazon is discounting the books because they can. I don't know whether it's most people. I don't really know what goes into the individual decisions. I know that when the gap in pricing was larger, the e-books surged. And when the publishers fixed that, what they did was they hurt their e-book sales and protected their print book sales. And as long as they're dealing with branded stuff that everybody wants, that works fine. But if they're dealing with stuff that has any competition, it disadvantages them.
Okay, just a few more questions. Yes. Good to know.
But I have begun to appreciate Amazon for certain reasons. I mean, I do a lot of searching on Amazon, and so they often send me back, you might be interested in this, we found these things. I also appreciate that for my research I can get used books on Amazon through their suppliers. And, you know, the thing that annoys me a little about demonizing Amazon is that unable really to be savvy about promoting books, and they're known for promoting only best-selling authors, and certainly no more are they cultivating beginning authors or someone who's had one book fairly successful, but then they will not continue to cultivate that writer. So are publishers doing anything to change their business model except just complain about Amazon? Are they doing anything to help promote writers?
That's a very good question. Did you all hear that? Yeah. I don't think I need it here.
publishers have shifted a lot. First of all, publishers recognize that any book can... In the old days, if you got in 1992 or even 2002, if you got a promotion on a book that was, let alone 6 years old, maybe even 6 months old, it wasn't in the stores anymore. Right, so some sort of publicity break would happen, and nothing would happen unless you believed that it would last long enough for you to get around to the stores, get the books in the stores, and then capitalize on the break. It's not the way it is anymore, right? Publicity break happens, you click, and you're buying the book from an online source. It doesn't have to be in stock anywhere. So publishers became aware over time, holy smoke. It's not just about the books that it's not just about the books that are brand new that are in the stores. We can promote any book and sell it if there's a topicality or at the moment that makes it make sense. The basic reconfiguration of publishers has been to cut down on the number of sales representatives that call on stores and to increase the number of marketing people that are working online. And every publisher has done that. And it's really not, and you would have to be an idiot not to. I mean, it's very clear where your business is coming from and that online is presenting these opportunities. But the fact is that it used to be that the promotion was putting the book in the store because the people found the books by going to the store. And when that changed, now, you know, it used to be that 90% of discovery was in stores. Now it's peanuts. So it used to be that if having a sales force that would get the books in the store and then better on the front table, right, or in the window, that was what it was all about. And it didn't. If you have to call the store more frequently to make that happen, it made sense. It doesn't make sense anymore. It's changed. But I think and the other thing is the publishers almost always have to publish more books than they can promote in order to run their businesses. So they're always making selection decisions of that kind, what's promotable and what isn't. No.
Good point. I think we'll have three more questions because it's getting a little late. Is there anybody who...
Yes, I have a...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
The problem is that that's not a question with a single answer. It's a question with an answer that's different for every book. And I think that to self-publish as a commercial idea. In other words, if you're self-publishing in order to maximize the amount of money you get back, you better have some capabilities. You better have a large email list. You better have or you do a lot of public speaking, or you're connected to media people who will write about your book, or et cetera. Now, if you have those kinds of things to put into play, you will get more pennies per unit sold by self-publishing than you'll get by going through a traditional publisher. But of course, the other thing that's true is if you have all that, that's attractive to a publisher. So, and it's attractive to an agent. Having those capabilities would also make it more likely that you'd get an agent and that the agent could get you a decent advance. And you would not get, if you did that, you would probably not get as much per unit sold, but presumably you would sell more units because the publisher's ability to promote is greater than yours. The publisher's ability to exploit the contacts and capabilities that you have are greater than yours. So I think self-publishing makes sense and can make a lot of sense if you have marketing capability, if you want the books for your own purposes, if you want to see the book. Sometimes that's what people, you wrote it, you want to see it as a book. Self-publishing will work just fine, and trying to knock yourself out to get somebody's imprint on it for a $2,500 advance that the agents, if an agent believed that was what you were going to get, they wouldn't sign you up in the first place. Because they get 15% of that, which is not worth their time. If you think you're really commercial and you have ambitions for a real career, then having the patience to work through an agent and work through publishers will give you the best chance of that happening in the medium to long run.
Unless you're writing romance. My understanding is people who write romance make a lot more money self-publishing than they would than they would with the traditional publisher.
Well, I think that's probably true, and it's true. The thing about romance is, going back to what I said about Amazon, right, or Kindle, if you read 3 books a week, Kindle was a great investment. If you read 3 books a year, Kindle was a crappy investment from the consumer point of view. The romance readers read a lot of books.
Yeah.
They go through, to a romance reader, the fact that the e-book is 99 cents or $1.99 and the print book might be $6.99 or $9.99, over the course of 50 or 100 or 200 books in a year, that's real money. So it makes sense for them to do e-books, and it makes sense for them to want cheap e-books, which means it's going to make sense for the self-published market to work very well. But I just was seeing earlier today that one of the big houses has started a new romance imprint. So that was counterintuitive.
Which one?
I forget.
Oh, okay. Sir, yeah.
You know, I think it's easier to find the things that have bubbled to the top than it is to worry about the things that really deserve to be at the bottom. Um, and And I think that the, in terms of what's out there, that's the easiest thing in the world to find out, right? Because it's all searchable, and you can find out how something was reviewed. You can find out how well something sold. I mean, there's a lot of information that's accessible if you look for it, and a lot of it through Publishers Marketplace, by the way. I mean, if you're seriously interested in the business, Publishers Lunch is essential, and Publishers Marketplace as a website is essential. It's just the information there is unmatched, and nobody will ever match it because it's been 20 years of aggregation of information that nobody's going to catch up with. So I'm not sure that there's an answer to that question. I'm not sure that there's really a question to that question. But I think that the I'll leave it at that.
You had a question.
Yeah, the ISBN exists, but it's unfortunately Amazon doesn't require it. So Amazon has its own numbers, ASIN, A-S-I-N. So what that means is that all the authors who decide to self-publish on Amazon and don't bother with Ingram might well not have ISBN numbers. And that would make my old friend Sandy Paul, who made the ISBN happen over her long career, very sad, but she's not here to worry about it.
Does that not affect the copyright? If you don't
ISBN doesn't affect copyright.
Okay, so you still own your copyright. Okay. Okay, one more question. Yes.
Well, there's certainly they are part of any online marketing foray, the publishers have known this for a long time. What you do is you look for similar books. You look for books that have similar audiences to your book, and you look at what they've done. You look at who's reading them. You look at where they're being featured. You look at how to piggyback onto conversations about those books to mention your book, et cetera, et cetera. And Goodreads is as good a place as any to find those conversations and to find out what people are saying about any particular book.
Would you just tell us one more the title of your book?
The Book Business. What Everyone Needs to Know. Co-authored with a very dear friend of mine who passed away named Robert P. Rieger. Oxford University Press.
Very good question. Thank you, Mike. This has been marvelous. Thank you.